that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape,
well, you better hit that.
Chimwits, Chimwits.
That's right, man.
Welcome to the Chimwits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Chimwits.
So I think this is a very Ryan-esque interview because it is an expert on dogs.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess you can glean from that I have dogs and Justin does not. I'm a big dog lover and Justin is not. No, you like dogs. You like dogs.
I lived with a dog for a little while.
Yeah, that's true. You did. And whenever I came over, you'd say, "Oh, Ryan, can you take the dog out for me?" So
that's true. That's funny.
Yeah, and I could see you getting angry with her for peeing on the floor. Having a dog is it's the greatest thing, and also can be the most frustrating sometimes, especially when they're young, or you're just not used to it. Mm-hmm. But it's a really great episode. We have. You know, lots to get to and talk about, both dealing with fitness and dogs, as well as just how, you know, working with the dog. And why don't you tell listeners a little bit about who we're interviewing today?
Yes, we are interviewing Gila Kurtz, and she is an expert on dogs in general. And she has a website just about dog and human lifestyle, as well as a book that she wrote. So, without further ado, here is our interview with Gila Kurtz. Hey, everyone. We are here with Gila Kurtz, and she is an expert in dogs, and she is the founder and owner of Dog Is Good. Hey, Gila, how's everything?
It is great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Thanks for being on the podcast. So just to let you know up front, I'm Ryan and I am a dog owner, dog lover. I have two dogs, one's 15, one is 3, and very much, you know, it's like a major part of my life. Justin is more of the dog skeptic. I don't know that he quite believes some of the things like that my dogs are as smart as they are, that they think, you know, we'll talk a little bit about kind of anthropomorphizing dogs, but he doesn't quite believe in some of that. So just to give you a heads up, you'll probably get some more skeptical questions from Justin and more gushing questions from me.
Okay. I can handle you both. I gotcha.
So Gila, first question. So are you a dog or a cat person?
Oh, I am most definitely a dog person with still a love for cats as well.
So we're a fitness podcast. So before we get into your background, dogs, tell us a little bit. Are you into fitness? If so, what sports do you play or what activities are you in? I guess give us a little bit about your background with fitness.
Yeah, no, I am absolutely a fitness fanatic. It's always been a very key component in my life ever since I was a teenager and started running. And so it's something that I do on a daily basis. And actually, years ago in my 20s, I actually did competitive bodybuilding and won the state title for Virginia in the short class that was. But that was, you know, many, many, many years ago. But since then, I've always maintained my my love of fitness, and I do things like I run all the time, and I'm really into HIIT training, and
awesome.
I still weightlift and just do a lot of functional fitness type things. But I think my biggest claim to fame, and I say this because I'm in my 50s, so I always feel like, if I can do it, anybody can do it. Strength activities, like, I mean, I can knock out 50 plus push-ups, no problem, 15 plus pull-ups, no problem. And so that's, you know, when I'm at the gym doing that kind of stuff, people always stop and are like, "Man, how'd you do that?" I'm like, you know, it's just commitment. It's just staying with it. And plus, I just love it. I like to be fit and healthy, and it drives my energy for what I have to do every day.
Sure. Geez, I can't do 15 pull-ups. So what was your first fascination or your love with dogs, and when did you know that you wanted to really work, you know, either with them or about them, you know, spend your life working with them and about them?
Yeah, that's a great question, because actually I did not grow up with dogs. I actually grew up with cats.
My question wasn't so bad, right?
That's right. It wasn't so off. But what's interesting about that is, if you had told me 20 plus years ago that I would not only love dogs, but that my entire life and career would revolve around them, I would have thought you were crazy, because I just, you know, it just wasn't part of my world. But several years ago, about 17 years ago almost, I was living in Japan with my military husband, United States Navy, and a family there had puppies, and I desperately wanted something to take care of. It didn't even matter at this point. I wasn't having a baby at the time, and so I adopted this puppy I knew nothing about. And over the course of a year, she taught me a lot in terms of patience and things like that. And so as an entrepreneur, in a roundabout way, I came to the conclusion that I wanted to combine this new love of dogs that had blossomed in my heart and in my soul. And for those of you who are dog lovers, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Right. And realize that there's a lot of potential opportunity with that as a career, whether it was to start as a dog walker. Quite honestly, I met a guy who was, that's what he did. He was walking dogs in the park. I was visiting the park after a route on my gourmet coffee vending machine business that I had at the time, and I always took my dog to the dog park after. And when he walked in with so many dogs, I was like, oh, what do you know, how do you have so many dogs? And he explained that that's what he did. And when I asked what he made for a living, I was blown away. The guy was pulling in over six figures. And so I just realized, hey, this could be a fun career. And given that my background is in teaching, I just came to the conclusion that working with people, helping them understand their dogs and work with them in terms of training would be the easiest and most enjoyable thing for me. And it certainly has been. And then from there, other things have blossomed.
Awesome. So I guess we'll jump into the questions about dogs then. Well, what is the first thing someone should know before getting a dog?
The first thing someone should know
before what are a few things? I'm sorry. What are a few things someone should know before, like, just jumping in to, and getting a dog?
Right. I think the most important question that they need to answer for themselves is, what kind of lifestyle do I have and what kind of dog will fit nicely into that lifestyle? So, some people just want a small dog that it doesn't require a lot of, activity because maybe they're not so active. But if you're a really active person, you also need to also look at the lifestyle that you lead, and will you be able to incorporate your pet into those activities too? Because it's not fair for them to stay home or to be relegated to the backyard. The other thing that I think is the most important to understand is that dogs are not little humans that enter your home. And I think that people need to be very conscientious of the fact that they come to us pre-wired with instinctive behaviors. And so when individuals hire me to help them train their dogs, I will often ask them, well, what is it that you consider to be a good dog? And what do you consider the behaviors to be a bad dog? And inevitably, they're creating two lists. And in the end, I'll ask, well, what is the dog? Which one of these is the real dog? And obviously, it's what they've defined as the bad dog. So in essence, when we're bringing dogs into our homes, we hire trainers or we ourselves are working with them to de-dog the very nature of who they are, right, as creatures, so that they fit into our world. So being very aware of that, they're not little humans. They don't understand English. They do come pre-wired with certain behaviors, and yet they're incredibly smart, and they can adapt given the right leadership and the right attention to their needs and setting them up for success. That's what I think people need to know. Besides the other obvious, what are the costs involved? What kind of breed is the best breed for my family based on lifestyle and activity? Things like that.
So unfortunately, we see a lot in society, just judging just by the number of dogs that end up in shelters, that people don't take the time to understand the requirements or what is involved. So, and a question I've always had, and be interested to have been interested in asking an expert, is: do you think there should be more restrictions on should the licensing process be a legitimate process, or can anyone just walk into a pet store and get a dog, or should there be more of an extensive process before making that decision or before being allowed to just walk in and get a dog? Because we do have an issue where there's just so many dogs that end up in shelters, or just dogs that are not raised properly because of people who kind of get it on a whim because they think it's a cool thing to get and they're cute, but they don't realize the kind of responsibility that goes into it.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And I kind of think that there's a very relevant correlation there between that pet adoption and actually being a parent to a real human. You know, yeah. There are no courses that are required. There's no specific workbook that comes with either, whether it's a child or a dog in specifics. And so, as a professional, I think it's very prudent that an individual going into the process of adopting what is going to be literally a family member for the life of the dog understands very clearly what investment is being made up front. And I mean the investment of time, because the beauty of a dog is that it doesn't require a lot of time in terms of duration to create a behaviorally sound, well-mannered pup that you can enjoy for the remainder of your life, both in and out of the home. I mean, if you're just spending the first solid 6 months and then continuing thereafter, you're going to have it made. But if you're going into the process, because it's so cute, yeah, you're going to end up with challenges. And I know that there is no guideline system yet that one has to qualify specifically other than to showcase that they're going to have a good / loving home. But in terms of really understanding what the dog's needs are and providing those, it would be great if they did that. I think we would see a reduction in terms of what's of the animals that are surrendered, because a lot of the behavior problems are not there. We call them behavior problems. They are just exhibiting behavior. Yeah.
Sure.
Their natural behavior.
So I guess that would lead to the next question. What are some of those behaviors that are either misconstrued, lost in translation, that we think, you know, we think a dog is acting bad, but they're just, you know, behaving, or maybe we've sort of trained the dog to act in a certain way? What are some of those behaviors that people should know about?
I think the most common ones that come up time and time again for my clients and people that I just meet in general is a dog that jumps, you know, jumping all over you type behavior, a dog that makes it very difficult to walk on leash. So a dog that's pulling or lunging at other dogs or barking, that's a particular problem. And I think barking in general too. So people, you know, just don't want their dogs to be barking. But a lot of these things can be resolved by understanding what shapes those behaviors and what keeps them in place. And unfortunately, a lot of people solidify those the very behaviors they don't want right from the get-go. So here you have a cute little puppy that is absolutely adorable. Maybe it's a golden retriever, you know, cute little fuzzy pup. And at the time, maybe it's, 15 or 20 pounds, just adorable. Well, less than that, because you can pick it up. And you're letting it jump on you. You're giving it all sorts of attention. And then, you know, by the time it's a 100-pound dog covered in mud, it doesn't understand that all of a sudden you don't want it to jump on you. So, you know, knowing how to set the dog up for success from the get-go, knowing how to get the right behaviors in terms of how you're attending to your dog. People reward barking all the time by talking to their dog and telling them to stop and be quiet and no, no, no. And so they're giving all sorts of attention to the animal when they're doing the very things that they don't want the dog to do. If they manage the environment and set them up for success and are aware of what's going on, then they can turn that around and prevent those problem behaviors from even happening from the get-go.
So I actually have that issue where my older dog used to bark at, and then the younger one barks at dogs in the street. So what would be the proper way to go? But do you ignore the behavior or tell them to stop, or like what's a good way to go about stopping that behavior?
Right. Well, I think it depends on the context of the situation. Yeah. So if your dog is barking because you're out on a walk and it sees another dog and it's barking, there's a couple of things going on. Is it barking because it wants to go over and play and interact? Is it barking because it's nervous and it's more of a distance-seeking bark, like go away kind of bark?
Yeah.
It depends on the situation, but regardless of what that is, if your dog has already learned a very solid attention cue to you, you can get your dog's attention on you. You can give them something else that they can be doing so that if they're engaged in that, they can't be barking at the other dog.
Yeah.
And if it is a case, you know, out on walks, leash frustration is very prevalent. And that is an owner issue. Owners are very hesitant to let their dogs interact with others on leash. And so they're always pulling their dogs back, which is an indication to the dog, like, uh-oh, something may be wrong. And also when they're greeting other dogs, the owners are typically standing behind, right? You're on, the dog's on your leash and you're behind your dog. The other person's behind their dog and you both are pulling up on your leads to prevent their dog, you know, just in case something could happen. And what that does, you don't realize this, but what that does is it changes the body posture of the dog. So it lifts up their chest, it raises them up a little bit, and the dogs themselves are reading, they observe body posturing. They're all about the body language in terms of their communication. So when they see that shift, in that is a sign of potential problem. So oftentimes, you know, we create our own leash aggression issues just by how we're walking our dogs.
So I guess sort of changing gears a little bit, what ways have dog and the relationship between dogs and humans evolved over the years, and how do dogs impact our mental health sort of in modern society?
That is a great question, and that is one of my favorite things to talk about, because there really has been an evolvement of the family pet, and we liken it to the dog going from the backyard into the bedroom and now everywhere we go. And what I mean by that is, years ago, the family pet was relegated to the backyard, basically, or maybe spent the night in the garage. It wasn't really in the house. And in the past 15 years, where it's evolved is that not only is the pet a component of every aspect of life within the home, we are now taking them wherever we go, from simple trips to the grocery store to what you guys will totally relate to, and that is, you know, going running with your dog, putting your dog on a special lead so they can cycle with you.
Ryan can relate to that one.
Yeah. I always hike with my dogs, you know. People, you know, going camping with your dog. So they've been incorporated. And to that, my personal hypothesis on it is this. In a world where we are so connected via technology 24/7, we've become literally disconnected from each other. And because the core basis of humanity is connection, the only thing that we truly connect with, truly, in a moment, without distraction, the only creature that's 100% fully present is a dog. And other animals too, but for those listeners, and myself included, dog owners, they are the ones. And so we derive from them this unconditional love, this unconditional attention. Their way of being and scientifically has been proven, you know, it does reduce the level of stress. It does release the oxytocin in the brain. And so there is a true physiological shift that occurs when you are in the presence of a dog, which is why service animals are so helpful for people in need. And you know, people will argue with me like, oh, well, you know, I'm very connected with my spouse or my child. And I agree. Like, I have a child, I have a spouse, but I guarantee you, I cannot recall a conversation I've had where 100% of the conversation, they did not have a phone in their hand and they were looking at me and truly engaged. And that happens again and again. And even if it looks like you're engaged, most people are not. They're thinking about what they need to do next or what they forgot to do at work or at home, et cetera, et cetera. So the dog itself is the creature that really is, for however length of time, you know, the first 2 minutes home and the door, they're connected, and we crave that. And that's why I believe the evolvement has continued to occur. Plus, the pet industry has enabled us with products and services to really incorporate them as true members of the family and part of our daily routines in and out of the home.
Wow. So it's true that pets have really become almost a stronger member of the family, very, you know, very close. So when people say, oh, my dog loves me, right? You hear it all the time. What does that mean? What is a dog's capacity for love? Like, does it love us the same way we love it? Does it see us as its provider? Like, what does that mean when someone says, my dog loves me? Is that really correct? Are dogs able to feel that?
So that is a really excellent question. And I'm going to be honest, I don't necessarily have 100% of the answer, but I will share with you what my thoughts are. on it. The term anthropomorphism, of course, you mentioned it earlier prior to the show, and we were talking, and it is a very common thing that we do to our animals. We crave that love. We project onto them exactly what we feel, and we love our dogs in a way that we don't love other people. Not to say one is better than the other. They're just a different type of love. And because the dogs are so responsive to what is going on with us emotionally, it appears as though they come back and, you know, just love you with that same capacity. But in reality, I believe that, yes, there is a connection there. There is a loyalty, and they crave that companionship as well. They're pack animals, so they want to be near their people. But they also see us as the provider of all their resources. So, you know, my dog knows I'm in charge of her food. I'm in charge of her access to the outside world. I'm in charge of her access to play, and I'm in charge of her access to, you know, the beds that she sleeps in. So while I can infer that she looks at me with loving eyes, et cetera, she's just happy to be a part of the pack, I believe, and knows that I'm in control of her resources. And at the end of the day, just so long as her resources are met, you know, she's always going to be loyal and loving. And that's just the true nature of dogs anyway. They're just going to always be loyal and what we imply as love in our capacity.
Sure. I guess that leads to the next sort of natural question is, what about other emotions? Can a dog be sad, angry, you know, spiteful, like
guilt,
things like that? Can they make you feel guilt? Ryan always mentions that the dog tries to make you feel guilty, or the dog will feel guilt after, you know, if it goes to the bathroom on the floor. Like, what is, do the dogs have capacity for those types of emotions? I know there's probably lots of discussion on the matter.
Yeah, there is a lot of discussion on the matter. And again, this isn't my area of expertise in terms of, you know, having a strong scientific background on those very subjects. I know there's a lot of research out there on it, though. And, you know, on the sadness thing, I have witnessed myself dogs who, so I've always had a multi-dog household, and I've had many friends with multiple dogs in a household, you know, two or three at a time. And when one passes on, there is a grieving process. I did notice a shift in my dogs when one passed away. And again, am I inferring that that's sadness? It appeared to be. You know, it appeared to be like a depression or just a melancholy, you know, a shift in their overall behavior. So that was very present. Or were they reacting to my sadness? You know, my shift and my tears and my crying, you know, so I don't know 100%, but I like to think that, yes, that there is that sign of emotion available to them. And then with the anger, dogs are real simple in that regard. I kind of liken them to guys in this way, in that they can get angry for a second and let you know about it. And they're very direct about it. You know, they don't beat around the bush. So if, you know, if a puppy or another dog is in another dog's space or is about to take something, you know, they might let them know, like, hey, you know, and for that moment. But there's no real, but that's it. It's just, this is it, done. I don't want you to touch this, or your safety is at risk if you do that, you know, in the case of a mother dog correcting a pup. But is it anger? I don't necessarily think it might be that anger emotion as much as it is a very directive, boundary setting, behavior. Or in the case of aggression where people go, oh, that dog's so angry. Maybe it's not angry. It's afraid, and it's trying to put distance between itself and what it's afraid of. So just like guys, you know, you might get mad at a friend or whatever. You're like, hey. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, you're totally fine. Whereas women, we're a little different. You know, we hold on to that for a while.
So, you mentioned when a dog passes away, and oftentimes for children, that may be their first real introduction to the loss of something. How What's the best way to deal with that? Do you want? Do you say something like it? I know you're really not supposed to say, "Oh, it's gone away. It's on a vacation." Like you're not supposed to say stuff like that, you know, because you know the child, because a small child might resent the dog for not coming back. I've heard things like that. I've also heard that you're not supposed to just get another pet immediately. What are some tips with dealing with the loss of a pet for children? And, you know, even for adults, too, it can be extremely traumatic.
You're asking such great questions today. I love it. That it is a very traumatic experience, both for children and for adults, because and different to the degree in that the adults have an attachment to the dog based on a different level of emotion and cognitive emotion than a child. But what I feel is important for a child is this, that, you know, life has a cycle, whether it's for animals or for people, and that all emotions surrounded around that life cycle are very valid emotions, from joy to frustration to the absolute grief of loss. And you know, an example, I have a daughter, and so she's been through the loss of two of our pets, and she's also been through their, you know, their full life. So early on, the joy of having a cute little puppy and the fun things that were involved around that, the frustrations of, you know, hey, you know, someone, Sasha got my Barbie dolls and chewed off all the feet, and you know, well, you know, you gotta learn to pick up your toys, and being patient with understanding, you know, where you play responsibility in what's going on in the environment. And then the lesson of loss. And I think it's important to allow your children to grieve and to let them see you grieving and to know that tears are okay and to have those conversations and then to take some time for that grief process. So when we had to put down or say goodbye, I should say, to our first two dogs, so 3 years apart when they both had to pass. Our daughter was with us for that process. And then we as family just went to the beach and just sat, you know. And then my husband and I were more distraught than she was. And again, I think that's just because we're at a different emotional and cognitive level than she was at the time. But I think that's the way to handle it. For me personally, is to allow the child to know what's going on, because it is a normal facet of life, to highlight all the wonderful things, and then to highlight what it feels like, you know, the pain that we feel, and that it's okay to feel that kind of pain.
So let's, I guess, hey, that's a great answer for both. I think for me especially, I'm dealing with an older dog, mm-hmm. and kind of how to deal with, you know, that process. He's in great health, but like he's starting to lose his hearing, and he's dealing with like little things here and there. That's like, I realize like this is my first dog, and so it's mm-hmm. a little scary. So it's good to kind of hear, you know, that, you know, it's part of what the process, and you know, just kind of go with it. But I guess changing gears back a little bit to how the dog affects our health, we talked a little bit about mental health, but how does it affect, or how can a dog add to someone's or a person's physical health?
Well, again, that's such a great question. And given the focus of your show, I'm definitely excited that you want to talk about that, because that is really, really relevant. Having a dog in the home, yes, it definitely affects our mental health in a very positive way. But it really also affects your physical health. So getting out there, walking with your dogs, I've known people who have lost weight just simply because they got a dog and now they're out, you know, walking the dog twice a day. Conversely, I've also seen people who have gained weight because their dog had passed and then they stayed on the couch and didn't, you know, keep up with their activity. But getting out there helps you get fit. And then there's all sorts of fun activities that you can do with your dogs too. So, you know, I mentioned personally, you know, I would run or I hike all the time with my dog. So on that physical note, and walk daily, you know, that keeps me healthy and fit. But other activities that are really fun for the dogs, like engaging in agility trials, where not only is it help to keep you fit, it keeps your dog really fit, but it also really fosters the strength and the bond between the two of you because you're doing the activity together. Where I live in California, stand up paddleboarding with your dog is huge, and I love paddleboarding. Although I can't get the lab to and she will not stay on the board. Like, this is a water dog, so that's not going to happen for me. But, you know, there's all sorts of activities that are very conducive to participating with your dog, and it makes it more fun.
Yeah.
So it gives you the opportunity to get out there.
So now, if somebody does decide they have a dog and they want to get out there and exercise with the dog, are there limitations as far as like the size of the dog, or, you know, what things should that person consider, whether it's like bringing water with them or bringing like an extra meal or treats, or like what can you do to make sure that, you know, you're healthy and safe, but that the dog is healthy and safe, especially with physical exertion?
Yeah, great. Again, you asked the best question. So first off, it's looking at the dog itself and its physical capabilities. So there are obviously several breeds that are really built, and their original purpose was for running or guarding or, you know, high level activity, herding, you know, things where running and a lot of activity was the nature of why they were originally bred. So those kinds of dogs are great for, you know, the running, the hiking, the more active activities. There are some smaller dog breeds too that are great with that as well. But looking at, what is the environment like? So is it really hot day? Even for the fittest dog, they're at risk for heat stroke when it's an incredibly hot day. So being cognizant of how the environment can impact their health. Always making sure, yes, that you have water, knowing that if you're going to be out for an extended period of time, that you do carry some extra food, because you would for yourself. So also for your dog, and then being equipped with a first aid kit and, some emergency food and water always available in your car is really important. And if you're going to be on the water, I'm thinking like if it's water activities, then you'd want to have a life jacket on your dog.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. So now on to the diets of a dog. Now we know that the industry for dogs, just with, you know, accessories and food, has become ginormous. Now, and you could, it's pretty logical to figure you want to feed the dog good food, right? Obviously, it's fuel. You put it into the body. Better food will have better results. But can we go overboard? Does a dog need to eat organic food? And do people go crazy with not feeding the dog, you know, anything, and being very strict? Like, can you feed the dog a few table scraps? Maybe it depends on the breed of the dog. And I know there are a few no-nos that you're not, like chocolate or like a few things that you're not supposed to feed dog. But do people are too worried about that? Are too lax with it? And are we feeding? Do dogs need to eat organic food? Like, what's the deal with the dog's diet?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The pet food industry has become a ginormous space, absolutely huge. And there are several school of thoughts going on there. The first and foremost is the fact that the rate of cancer in dogs these days has risen quite a bit. So the question becomes, is it the food that they're eating, and what is the quality of the food? And there's a lot of different types out there. There's the organic foods, there's the raw food. There's a lot of people who firmly believe in feeding only raw to the animal, because that's how it ate, years ago, thousands of years ago in their ancestry. There's the food of thought that grain-free foods, etc. But the food industry has been it has really evolved, and there's a lot of different schools of thought. And so depending on who you talk to on any given day, they're going to have a different opinion. But the fact of the matter is this: ideally, just as with ourselves, trying to reduce the amount of chemicals and non-necessary ingredients in the diet is always helpful. Feeding natural type things. I don't feed my dog raw. I don't have anything against it. It's just not something that I do. But I do use grain-free and protein-based foods with a lot of nutrients in it, because my dog is very active. Some people, I have a client who will not feed her dog anything meat-related, so the dog only gets, salmon or fish-based products. So, yeah, I think it's just a very, very personal thing, but I think that just like anything else, the more natural you can go, and also feed my dogs on occasion real vegetables and things like that, with their mixed in with their food. So trying to get them some of the natural nutrients that come from, you know, raw vegetables that are healthy for them, greens and sweet potatoes and things like that, just to extend ideally the life of the dog. And there's some really great websites out there that address this, because as we want our dogs to stay with us as long as possible and lead a quality of life into their senior years, the diet definitely does have an effect, just like it does with us.
So now, your business is Dog is Good, and you also wrote a book, correct?
I did.
Can you tell us about those things?
Yeah, so Dog is Good is a lifestyle brand for dog lovers. And basically, we share how great it feels to be with your dog on a daily basis. And we do that through a variety of different products that are available for people that really speak to who they are as a dog lover. So if you go to the Dog is Good website, you'll find things from apparel to gift products to home decor products, accessories, all sorts of fun stuff. But the reason why the brand has become the brand of choice among dog lovers is that it's very message driven. We really have a knack, I should say, for identifying the core of what our relationships are with the dogs and expressing that in a way that people identify with instantaneously. So we always say, you know, yes, dog lovers love our products, but really it's not the dog lover. It's because we speak to who they are as an individual. We're about, our messages are about how they share their lives with their dogs. And so it's, they relate to that. And then on the book, which is my biggest passion right now, Fur Covered Wisdom, A Dog Can Change the Way You See the World. With all the interaction I've had with dogs over the past 16 plus years, I have in the past few years really taken to heart some of the lessons that I can learn from my own dog. And so I like to say, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I had a period in my life as I was building this business and trying to be everything to everybody all at the same time. You know, you kind of reach a point of where you're going to implode. And it was at that point that I kind of looked at my Labrador retriever and thought one morning as I watched her wake up so exuberant to take on the day that I just kind of said, gosh, I wish I could wake up like her every day. If I could, every day would be amazing. And I thought about that for a second. I was like, gosh, I bet if I watch her and kind of begin to glean how she interacts with every day, I might learn a few things. And so that's what the book is about. And that's my mission and message to others. Wow. That there are anecdotal lessons that we get from our pets on a daily basis.
Wow.
And if we are open to drawing those lessons out and taking one at a time to apply to our own lives, we truly can learn to live more simply, shift how we are in our businesses, and really bring play and joy back to our lives in a way that dogs experience on a daily basis.
Wow. This is kind of a random question, but it just popped into my head. It was freezing. I live in New York City. It was freezing the other day, and I was outside walking with my girlfriend, and we saw a woman who we've seen with a dog, and she loves that dog. She's always saying, you know, cute things to it. But it was freezing, and the dog didn't have a sweater on or any clothing. And we were thinking, wow, for someone who really loves the dog, is to not give it any clothes in this freezing weather, you know, that doesn't seem right. Does that really make a difference?
Said like a person who doesn't have a dog.
Like, does a dog sweater, like, does the fur matter? Like, does the dog get cold? Like,
well, it can get cold. It depends on what kind of breed it was.
Sure, sure.
Do you know what kind of breed it was?
It had, I do not. It was, it had really crazy hair. Like, it almost as if like, almost kind of, I'm not a poodle type hair, but like, it was like really intense, like thick, weird strands of hair that stuck out. It was definitely it was an interesting breed. Let me try to look. I'm gonna try to look it up right now.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was gonna say to answer your question, you know, dogs can get chili, like certain breeds who have very, very fine fur, or very little fur, like no fur, even a Chinese crested or a Boston Terrier. You know, when the temperatures start to get very, very cold, they can be chilled too, because they're not running around. They're walking with the owner, or they're just standing there, so they can. Other dogs with a lot of fur, again, it depends on the amount of time they're out in the cold. But yeah, you know, I know that's why that part of the pet industry has grown. There's also special booties that you can put on a dog for areas where you might live in the snow or extreme cold, where they, or ice, you know, where they would want, where they put salt on the ground to protect their paws, or extreme heat, like in the case of Phoenix, if you've ever gotten out of a car and just touched the pavement. People don't realize. I watch dogs at the beach. If you've ever stood on the sand when your feet are burning hot, do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, we don't think about that with our dogs.
Sure.
And their little paws are burning hot, too. Yeah. So there are products that are definitely, yes, they're really true. There is some true utility there.
I actually 3D printed booties for my dogs, which worked well because I was able to like scan their paws and then design booties that fit exactly to their paws and kind of
that is amazing.
Have a hinge and yeah, it worked well. But yeah, like from what I understand, because it doesn't get really cold here, but I think from what the vets have told me is like, you know, if it's below freezing, then you might need it. But otherwise, as long as they're walking and you're not stopping, you know, they're and or you know, and like mine are Yorkies, so they have a good amount of hair or fur. Like it's not necessary. But I've had that experience that I wonder if you have too, where if you, like I've in the cold where the dogs are fine, I'll get people that will yell at me about having a coat on the dog, which is again anthropomorphizing the dogs, because it's like, no, the dog's right. Fine, they're just walking, he's happy enough to be outside.
I guess we feel cold, but I guess we're wondering if the dog's fur protects it. I think that's probably what we're
The dog's fur does protect it, but like your vet did prescribe, you know, when the temperatures start dropping into those single digits, you know, anything added can be helpful.
All right, so now I guess we'll close with this. Gila, you have a partnership, right? You always do a partnership every year, correct? So now you have a new one that you're working with right now, correct?
Yes, I'm very excited about it. So Dog is Good. We are a veteran-owned business. My husband, almost 28 years now. It was 27 years in the Navy, has since retired as Navy captain. But as a veteran-owned company, it's near and dear to our hearts to support our military. But because we are also love dogs, we have our corporate giving arm is called Dog is Good for Patriots. And every year we select an organization that really epitomizes the positive benefits of the dog-human relationship. And this year, I'm super excited to support Warrior Canine Connection. They are based out of Maryland, and they have a very unique approach to training service dogs for veterans with PTSD. So in most cases, service training is done by individuals, volunteers, and then the dog is given to a person in need. In this case, with Warrior Canine Connection, I just love this. I think it's so brilliant. Okay. So the veterans with PTSD, they are the ones that are actually training these puppies.
Oh, wow.
So one puppy will actually touch 60 to 70 lives over the course of a year. And that training itself provides therapy for those individuals, so that rather than only one getting the benefit of a service dog, now you have 60 to 70 getting the benefit of working with these animals, the therapeutic benefit of that. And then, yes, one does get the service dog who will stay with that person for the remainder of its life. But as the cycle rolls through throughout the training program, it's just amazing the difference that these animals will make. And, our service members, they need that. And so it's just such an honor to support that. We have a whole line of products that support it. We do other fundraising activities throughout the year in support of them that we'll be launching. And then we also, because we sell to retailers throughout the country, we also encourage them to partner with us on key holidays in the year, like Memorial Day and 4th of July and Veterans Day, to do a roundup for Patriots program and then donate proceeds to them as well. So it's our goal to just, you know, create awareness for what they do and how they serve, and then to be a very small component in that in forms of making our contribution to make a difference.
Wow. That's fantastic. It just sounds so, you know, touching and can really impact so many people positively, and great for the dogs as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, and by the way, I found out what that dog was. I'm pretty sure it was a poodle.
Oh, was it?
So I wonder if okay. It was warm.
Depending on what the temperature was, I'm sure it was fine.
Okay. All right. Gila, thank you so much for coming on. You are just an amazing wealth of knowledge, and it was really fun speaking with you. I learned so much stuff. Ryan, did you learn anything?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely.
Excellent.
Trying to put into practice getting my dog to stop barking in the street.
Nice.
All right, well, thanks.
Well, that's
so much.
Great. It was an honor to be a guest on your show, and I appreciate it. I also appreciate you pushing out, you know, health and well-being to the world out there, because that's it's all a holistic approach, yeah. You know, to growing our lives. It's
sure.
It's health, it's wellness, it's giving back, it's the relationships we have with our dogs and other people, and you know, so I appreciate that and the chance to share with your audience.
Excellent. Great. So yeah. Once again, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So apparently we asked some pretty good questions.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think we're pretty good at yeah. coming up with...
Not to toot
good,
our own horns,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, but no, we're good at coming up with some good questions, I think. Definitely think our interview subjects appreciate that.
Yeah. I thought it went into pretty interesting directions.
Yeah.
I certainly learned a lot.
Yeah, well I liked... we went places we didn't... Yeah, we just kind of were very... little more off the cuff as far as how we did ask questions, because there were certain things where, you know, really required some interesting follow-ups, and I think she did a great job answering. I mean, I thought it was really, really good. Some great information,
really,
especially
liked,
for
I really liked how she is a dog lover. Her whole life is built around it. It's her business, but she's not unrealistic about
yeah.
it. She's not like, oh, my dog, you know, loves me with all its heart and would do anything for me. Like, she's realistic about it. Yeah, you know, my dog loves me, she's loyal, but also this is the dog's capacity for
yeah.
you know, emotional yeah. sort of intelligence.
Yeah, and I think it is important. Is there's a certain level of I don't want to say detachment, because that's not the right word, because I like, again, I love my dogs like they're my own, you know, kids.
Sure, sure.
But there is a level that you need of objectivity that's necessary, that you need to be able to take a step back at times and say, all right, you know, it's a dog, you know, this is their capacity, and
yeah.
and to stay away from over anthropomorphizing the dogs,
sure,
and,
sure.
and assigning behaviors to things that aren't really there.
Sure.
And it makes a big difference, and I think it's something, a lesson that everybody could learn. But I thought it was great, and I think anybody that's a dog lover or dog owner or thinking of having a dog could really gain a lot from this chat. So hopefully you took something from it, and if you know anybody that could get something from it, definitely send them our way.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it.
Yep.
As usual, all of our stuff is at thegymwits.com. All our social media. If you have questions, shoot us an email at thegymwits@gmail.com. We got Ask the Trainers we need to get answered, and we'd like some more to answer, so definitely shoot us your questions. So that is it. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Gymwits.